When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the first edition of The Analyst Inside Cricket. I'm Simon Hughes, The Analyst, and this is Simon Mann.
Hello, good to be here, Simon.
We're going to give you a weekly diet of cricket discussion, opinion and comment about the big issues as we travel around the cricketing globe.
And we'll have interviews with the top players and celebrities who are passionate about the game. Today we're going to ask, has England's Test team lost its way? And is Test cricket in general evolving rapidly enough to keep pace with the challenge of T20?
We have Alistair Cook debating whether he really enjoys captaining and insight from South African great Barry Richards about the influx of South African players into county cricket.
Also, each week we're going to bring you our highlight, lowlight of the week, the thing we most love or most hate about the game of cricket.
I can't wait. I can't wait to find out what yours is. And importantly, we want to hear from you. So please give us a review on iTunes and tell us what you think. Or you can comment on Twitter at The Analyst or at cricket_man.
With two N's. So where do we start, Simon? Alistair Cook?
I think we have to start with Alistair Cook, the man who's waiting for his fate to be either decided by Andrew Strauss or deciding it himself. We still don't quite know in the middle of the week before England play a one-day series in India. But I sense that it's time for him to hand the reins over. Whether he makes that decision or whether Andrew Strauss makes that decision, I don't know. But I just see Cook, watching him at the end of that series, talking to him also prior to the series, you just sense that his time was up as captain.
Well, that's an interesting point about who makes the decision. I mean, it's assumed that Cook gets to make the decision. But, I mean, is there a sense in which, you know, England can say, look, we don't think it's quite working anymore? I know he's had, you know, lots of public backing from the coaching staff, but, you know, is it up to Andrew Strauss to make a tough decision? Say, actually, no, Alistair, actually, I think it's time for you to go.
Yeah, it may be. I think if you look back to Cook's losing the one-day captaincy, he was still captain in Sri Lanka when you and I were out there watching the one-day series. And it was, you almost had to sort of wrestle the captaincy reins from him because he was determined to try and make a good job of it.
Well, there was a World Cup coming up as well.
There was a World Cup, and he felt he was destabilising the team and the outfit by stepping down just a month before, but in the end he was relieved of his post. I think this time, just looking at his general demeanour and the hardship of touring India for the second time as well, having won the first time, I just think, in a way, the four-year cycle of England captain, that demanding job which has so much to it, you know, it's not just directing operations on the field but also off it as well, and being the point of contact, being the person that has to be interviewed in every situation, having the responsibility of so many players and so much status, so much responsibility, just it gets too much for you. And you look at all the captains, none of them have really survived more than that 3-4 year cycle.
I remember after the South Africa series I asked him, actually, at Centurion, I said to him, I'm going to ask you about your future now, because not because you've lost, but because you've won. Actually, you know, he won in South Africa. He won in India. He's won the Ashes. I wonder whether actually at the end of the South African series, whether that would have been I know it's easy with hindsight, but I did ask the question at the time, whether that would have been a better time for him to go. Joe Root or whoever, it looks like it's going to be Joe Root, gets the chance to lead in an English summer, take the team to India, then have another full summer before England play the Ashes. I wonder whether that would have been a better time. I know, of course, it hasn't happened. It didn't happen like that. And you know, you just look at England over what have they achieved over 2016 as a Test team? Actually, very little. They've gone backwards, really.
And the thing is that captains are so important. If I look back to the guy I played under, Mike Brearley, because he was always engaged in captaincy, because he was always thinking, because he found the whole sort of art of making players better about themselves, making them feel better about themselves, making them perform better. He found that also fascinating. So it became, you know, he got extra 10% out of every player he captained. He lifted the team to make them to be more than the sum of their parts. And that's the key to being a captain. You have to be energised. You have to love the job. I don't think latterly Cook has loved the job. And it was interesting, the insight that I got when I did an interview with him, just actually over the phone, in fact, just before the India series started. And I asked him, you know, one simple question: do you really enjoy captaining? And it was just interesting to see what his answer was.
Do you actually enjoy it? Do you really enjoy being captain?
It has its moments where I enjoy it, and it has its moments when it's particularly, it is hard work. I do look forward to the day that hopefully I can play a test match as just a batter. I do look forward to that day. There's no doubt about that. If that happens, I don't know if it will happen, but if I do look forward to that day, I really enjoy going back to Essex and standing at first slip and being the bloke who suggested up to tender or 40 rather than the bloke who actually has to make the finals.
So, you know, it's interesting, isn't it, that he was very hesitant about answering the question whether he really enjoys it. I suppose 2 years ago, when he was in the throes of beating South Africa in the winter, that was a year ago, but prior to that, winning the Ashes, say, he probably would have said, yeah, I love it. But once you, and this was before England played India, so, and they'd lost in Bangladesh, so he was obviously not sure whether he really enjoyed it anymore, and he immediately said there, I can't wait for the day when I'm just a batsman. And I think as soon as you say that, you're done, really.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to have that 100% commitment to the job, the passion, the energy, the enthusiasm, live it day and night, 24/7. And if you haven't got that, I think that conveys itself to the players, even subliminally, and certainly to yourself. And, just looking at him during that India series, he wasn't engaged. Unfortunately, as a player, as a batsman, his greatest strength is being disengaged, being in his own bubble, playing his own way, being unaffected by the surroundings and the situation. But in a way, that is his greatest skill as a batsman, and it's a disadvantage as captain.
Yeah. I mean, nothing happened in India, as far as I was concerned, that there were any different from what we were expecting to happen, did it? I mean, you probably weren't necessarily expecting 200 stands for the eighth wicket, or a record score of 750, but I think a lot of people thought that it was going to be 4-5-0. I didn't think it was going to be 5-0. Actually, it wasn't. But actually, they did take a real hammering. They lost the test match in Bangladesh. They lost, you know, 5 of those 7 test matches. It wasn't particularly surprising, though. You know, it was in a way, it was a bit like that Sri Lanka series, the one-day series before we lost the captaincy before the World Cup. Nothing actually happened in Sri Lanka that was surprising. England lost 5-2. Well, you know, that was about what they were going to achieve. Same with India, but I suppose it just wears you down, just standing there watching your bowlers being thrashed around by, you know, wonderful batsmen. No, you haven't got the ammunition to cope, and you must think, how much more of this do I want?
It must be
someone else's job now.
Yeah, and just the way the team is sort of starting to shape up as well, with more younger batsmen in, with the sort of Root, Stokes, Bairstow, Butler kind of axis coming into the team, you sort of feel it's almost a new generation, and Cook will still be invaluable as a batsman, and they need his runs at the top of the order. Perhaps actually Mike Selby, interestingly, in the Cricketer magazine, has suggested him batting at number 3 in future.
Well, they're going to have to make a decision there, aren't they? Because they've got Hamid and they've got Jennings, so a decision is going to have to be made.
Of course, you know, we shouldn't sort of finish the Cook discussion without just saying he has been a fantastic leader of men. I love the little things that he's brought into the team, like the respect for the opposition, the generosity in defeat at times, the lack of kind of exuberant celebration when they win, because he's quite a measured character. And things like when you've had a really hard session in the field, there is a temptation to leg it off the field and get drinking and change your shirt and all that. But he obediently waits respectfully until the opposition batsmen, who've probably caned it everywhere, have left the boundary rope and crossed the line to the dressing room first before the team do. He's stopped things like Twitter and Facebook interaction straight after the game with the players, so they can talk about the game and kind of be a team rather than lots of individuals. I like lots of the things he's done, the examples he's set, but in the end, it may be the right time just to have a different sort of personality as captain.
Yeah, well, it could well be that will happen. And, you know, Joe Root is it seems like he's the only candidate to take over. What about the team in general? You know, they've had a poor 2016. I know they've played an awful lot of cricket. what's it, 17 test matches in a year, which is a lot, especially that the tour of India. They've lost eight of those matches. There were high points. The high point came really right at the start of the year with a win in South Africa. It seems to me, I mean, I've thought this for a while with the England test team, is that they've got lots of talent, they've got lots of good players, but they're all in the same sort of positions.
A lot of all-rounders.
I mean, that has changed slightly towards the end of the South African series when they seemed to have found some top order players. I mean, Hamid, early days, but the way he shaped in India, I mean, he looks as if he's got, you know, a lot of class, high, you know, lots of potential. Jennings, you know, 100 in the first Test match, 50 in the second. I mean, you know, he is an option as well. So it's possible that actually they sort of come across a solution to their top order problems
almost by default.
Well, a little bit, accident. Yeah, a little bit with Jennings, I suppose. Yeah,
the bowling worries me now a little bit because, you know, the spinners have not really moved on, I don't feel. I think still Adil Rashid is a nervous character who struggles when the pressure's on, and he lacks confidence. So he can't be relied on as the number one spinner, which means it's going to be Moeen Ali again. And Moeen, I think, has regressed slightly. He just doesn't seem to have kicked on as a bowler. So England, there is, you know, a real window of opportunity there for someone to put their hand up and say, I can be this go-to spinner, the Graham Swan of the 2015 to 20 sort of era, if you like, and be that kind of banker, because they're only going to play one spinner in Test in England for sure.
What happens if he plays as a top order batsman though? Plays at number five, and you can play a spinner, a
second spinner. That would be great. That would be great. But there's quite a lot of batsmen sort of champing at the bit for places. So with Jennings and Hamid coming on board as well, so it's going to be quite sort of tricky. And Anderson, Broad.
That's a big problem, isn't it, for England? It's a big problem that's looming. You can see it. It's actually closer than the horizon.
And then you see they've got seven tests very quick succession in the summer. They're not starting test matches till July next year. So to expect those guys, especially Jimmy Anderson, to get through all those seven tests. Chris Wokes is obviously improving. It would be nice to see Mark Wood come back. Mm. I think they need that extra thrust from somewhere.
So do you think the team actually has regressed, or the point I made earlier that, you know, what could they do in India? You know, whoever was captain in India, you know, if it had been Mike Brearley, would he have been able to get enough out of his spinners to check India's top class batsmen? I suspect not. I mean, England, for example, they did win four tosses. They did score over 400 or 400 or over in their first innings three times, and yet they still lost.
Yeah,
they still lost 4-0. Yeah. So I mean, that suggests that,
well, they were still finding their roles, weren't they? The batsmen, where did Moeen Ali bat? You know, Butler was coming in at number seven. Bairstow was moved up to number five. He'd kept wicket loads and then had to go out and bat. They haven't still kind of sorted out their batting order. And until they do that and start scoring consistent runs, they're not going to be a consistent test team.
No. I mean, do you see them as... I mean, can they win the Ashes? Can they retain the Ashes?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think so. I don't think Australia are that good. I mean, they've come back well after playing poorly against South Africa. They've come back well against Pakistan, but we know Pakistan are fairly unpredictable. Steve Smith showed, I think, the power of a new captain or a newish captain, because he really regenerated Australia. And that's in a way that indicative of what a captain can do, you know, with it, changing the mentality a little bit and getting everybody rejuvenated, and suddenly they're playing like a really good team. They have got a good raw material, good basic ingredients. I think the Ashes is brimming up with England sort of emerging with their younger players coming into the side as well. I think it could be an absolute classic.
Yeah, I mean, they have got some top class players, really exciting players to watch as well. You know, the likes of Stokes and Root and Hamid. I just feel there are a few gaps in the side. Perhaps there are fewer gaps in the side than there were, having found the top order players. Just going back, I mean, 2016, I actually thought the most disappointing performance for England in 2016 was at the Oval, when they were 2-1 up against Pakistan. They'd come back brilliantly at Edgbaston. To lose that game, I think that was the game for me which made me think, you know, how good is this England Test team? How all round strong are they?
Mm.
And I thought that was the most disappointing defeat they had last year.
Actually, there's been, you know, generally a lot of very one-sided Test matches, hasn't there, over the last year or two? It seems that home advantage is massive, and then at the end of a series, when sometimes it's a dead rubber, the home team tend to lose. But overall, the test matches that we've seen, you know, around the world, and there've been a lot, have been a bit one-sided. There haven't been too many tight games, as if home advantage generally has been a very strong decisive factor.
Yeah, well, that's why I thought that game was particularly disappointing, because England had the home advantage.
They squandered the toss there, I think.
Yeah.
You know, Cook actually got the toss wrong. And in fact, he, in his interview that I did, he did admit that he should have done whatever he did in the other way around. He should have.
Well, he listened to Alex Stewart. Yeah. And Alec knows the oval, you know, like the back of his hand, that he said bat first. And Cook said, we consulted Alec, we batted first. And it all went wrong. I remember being out there at the toss and you thought, this feels like a bowl first morning. But they didn't, and Pakistan won comfortably.
Yeah.
What about Test cricket in general? We talked about the England team. What about Test cricket in general? Is it doing enough to keep pace with the challenge of T20? I mean, it's very easy just to turn on your television and watch the action coming in from Australia, and you see, you know, the back end of a Test match in Australia, and then you see the big bash later on in the evening, and the difference in the crowd sizes are enormous, aren't they? Is that, how much of a concern is that? Or do you say over the course of a game, you know, say 80,000 people turn up to watch a Test match from days 1 to 5, does that compensate? Or is it all about attendances on the day? You know, if you've got to be able to fill your stadium on the day, I mean, it's a lot to ask, isn't it, to have, I don't know, 40,000 people at the SCG every single day for a Test match?
I'm sadly, I don't want to sound like a doom monger, but I think if you look at Test cricket as a sort of financial exercise, it's doomed, because Test cricket demands space, as in a big ground, big space, and time. And people haven't got space. Space is expensive, property is expensive, and time people haven't got anymore. So the idea of playing five-day Test matches in a summer and hoping that they're all going to be sold out is just a pipe dream. Clearly, the iconic Test series in the future will survive, like obviously the Ashes. But I can see, firstly, they're going to need to condense it into four-day Test matches, which makes them a lot more sense.
I think that's bound
to
happen.
I think it's bound to happen, and I think it makes a lot of sense, actually. I know that there'll be many purists out there who say, oh, you know, what about the fifth day, and what about draws, and so on. You can still do that. You can still play extra. You can have extra overs. I know that means they're going to be staying till, you know, a bit later, but they've got floodlights. I can see, you know, slightly longer days play, but I think put a bit more pressure on teams to play proactive cricket. Some of the Test matches we've seen recently have been quite dull in the middle periods of play. Batsmen could be put under a bit more pressure to take the initiative. And, you know, wider than that about the four-day Test matches, I think we definitely, desperately need a World Test Championship to give it context. And the ICC have been prevaricating about that for a long time. You have to have something that gives each match a bit more meaning.
If we do go to four-day tests, and I'm a big advocate of five-day tests, but I've recently just been beginning to waver a little bit about, you know, might be worth going to four-day tests. I haven't totally made up my mind, but I was a big five-day test man. But if we do go to four-day tests, they have to sort the overrate out. And I think there's nothing wrong with some artificial penalties for teams that fail to bowl their overs in time. For example, I remember there was a good suggestion, interesting suggestion. You need to really think it through. Last summer, someone was saying that if a team hasn't bowled their overs by 6 o'clock or 6:30, the team who are batting at that time can score freely without players being out. You know, things like that. I mean, I know that sounds very radical. It sounds artificial, but actually, it would concentrate minds, wouldn't it, and get teams to bowl their overs in time. I don't think it's acceptable anymore that we have 6.5 hours. And, you know, there are still three overs not bowled. The reason I think that, people say, well, it's still very exciting, you know, and we get results inside 5 days. As a spectator, if you watch the game, it just seemed to be standing still. And I think the game of Test cricket has to be more dynamic. When I watched the County Championship decided between Middlesex and Yorkshire, I was commentating on the game. You get a sense of the rhythm of the game when you're commentating. And I would turn to my summarise at the end of the over, and you'd expect a long gap, and you know they have a lot to say, but actually they didn't have time to say very much because the bowler was ready to bowl the next over. Because in County Championship cricket you have got to bowl more overs, and teams they do it, and you're really conscious of it happening. You're conscious of the game moving quicker,
and it's not hard to do, actually. It's just little tiny things like being in your position when the batsman's taking guard, when a new batsman comes in, rather than being still in the huddle and trying to decide what to do, getting quickly to your mark, jogging to your bowling mark at the end of the previous over, so you're ready to go, handing your cap to the mid-off fielder who can jog in and give it to the umpire. So there's lots of little things like that they can definitely do to speed up the game. One other thing that worries me about Test cricket is the weakening of some of the lesser countries. Yeah. And when I say weakening of the lesser countries, I mean South Africa are not a lesser country in terms of performance, but in terms of numbers, they are. And they're losing players now to counties, the exploiting the coal pack idea. Coal pack. Do you know what the coal pack are? Everyone talks about coal pack. Can you remember what that is?
He was
Mario coal pack. Yeah. I think he was a German
basketball player,
handball.
It? Handball.
A German handball player, and who tried to play in another country and was able to do so under the European Court of Law, and South Africa qualify under that same thing. So South Africans who, I think it helps if you have one parent who's got an English connection, doesn't it? But anyway, there are lots of these players opportunistically coming to England to play county cricket because they can earn $100,000 a year playing for a county. They're not sure of their place in the South African side, players like Carl Abbott, where they'll probably earn less than half that, especially with the exchange rate. Now, that has a potential to really weaken countries, not just South Africa. And just to pick up on that, I thought I'd ask a South African great who, of course, also played county cricket in England for Hampshire, Barry Richards, what he thought about it from the South African perspective.
Is South African players coming to England to play for county cricket sort of almost deserting South Africa? Is that good for Test cricket?
It's a difficult one because, obviously everybody... I think 2017 onwards is going to be the years of the independent contractor. So, I mean, it's going to be incumbent on a lot of countries how they're going to go about keeping their own players because, with the surplus of one-day competitions, Test cricket is under enormous threat. And unless the RCC pay attention to it, you'll be left with the Icon series, the Ashes and South Africa versus Australia. But what happens to the minnows? It's going to be very difficult for them to keep going and for TV audiences to be engaged in all of that.
Problem, isn't it?
It is a huge problem. Although, if you give it some context, though, when you look back, what you didn't have, of course, was 2020, but when Sri Lanka first came into Test cricket, okay, they had big crowds when they first started, the first Test match they played against England, but crowds in Sri Lanka have never been that good for Test cricket. Crowds, even in England at times, haven't been that good. In fact, they're much better now, it seems to me, than, say, in the 70s when I was first started watching cricket. 1981 at Headingley, when that famous Test match took place, the ground wasn't full when Ian Botham was smacking it around on the Monday. So there's that. Of course, now we've got T20, and T20 is extremely glamorous. So one point about South Africa I would make, of course, is that they are changing. They are trying deliberately to change their cricket, aren't they? They want more black players to play
the
South Africa.
The
quota system. It's a deliberate policy. We're not being controversial here. It's what it is what they are trying to do. So inevitably, while that's happening, white players are going to leave South Africa. It seems to me. And more black players are going to play for South Africa. So they're taking, South Africa in cricket is taking a longer view. Obviously, it feels damaging to them at the moment that they're losing quality players. But what their hope is that, in 20 years' time, a South African team, might have 8 black players and 3 white players, or 11 black players, or 10 black players. And that is part of the transformation programme. It seems to me, anyway, that... And at the moment, there's that sort of collateral damage of white players coming to England because they can earn a lot of money here and perhaps they don't totally feel secure about their place in the side.
Very much so. And it's great opportunism from the Hampshires and Sussexes and people like that who've picked up these players. And no doubt it will enhance the strength of county cricket, especially with less England players playing because they're rested by England, so they don't play much. I mean, I noticed the other day that Joe Root has played 5 T20s for Yorkshire in 3 years. Mm. So, looking ahead, I suppose, when we do get the new concept, a new city-based T20 tournament, some of those England players, plus a few of these coal plats, are going to have to play to make sure that it's a really good product.
Should we do our highlight, low light?
Why not?
highlight. What are you going to have, the highlight or the low light?
Well, I'll go for the highlight this time. And I just think I've been watching a bit of the Big Bash and other T20s. And although my first love is Test cricket, I do appreciate T20, particularly the way it brings other sports into the game. The shots that batsmen play now have got products of hockey with the sort of flick shots over their shoulder, and tennis with that sort of top spin forehand biff over deep mid wicket, the golf follow through and the hip positions of the big drives over the top. In fact, I went down to the power hitting clinic run by Julian Wood, a former Hampshire player, and he gets a hurling stick out to actually practice sort of hurling wristy positions to hit the ball through the offside. So just the way that cricket's embraced other sports has been brilliant. Mm. What about you? I'm sorry, I'm going to have to ask you, miserable man, a low light.
Yeah, well, it's a small bugbear, but it actually goes back to this idea of promoting Test cricket. When Test cricket is played, no one knows who's playing because there are no names and numbers on the back of shirts. Very few sports allow this to happen. Tell the public who is playing. People traditionally say, oh, we know the players and it's all about getting to know the players. No, draw the public in. Let them know who's playing. Put names and numbers on their shirts. I mentioned this to Tom Harrison, who's the chief executive at the ECB about a year ago. And actually, he took a note. He wrote it down. He said, well, that's not a bad suggestion. So let's make it happen.
First influence you've ever had on English cricket.
Probably. Well, that hasn't happened yet.
Actually, perhaps they should put the Twitter handle on their back, and then you could actually communicate with them.
Well, that'll be happening in about 20 years' time. But at least to tell people who's playing, put their numbers and names on. They do it in the county championship. Has the county championship fallen apart? Has the world split in two? No, it hasn't. The cricket game goes on. Do it in Test cricket as well.
Good call. Well, listen, time's up. It's been fun talking to you. Don't forget to leave a review of what you thought on iTunes. And we're off to India now to commentate on England's one-day series out in India. So we're looking forward to that.
It's going to be fascinating. England have had a terrible record in the 21st century in India. They've changed their approach to one-day cricket. Will it work? Well, we'll see.
So the next one of these will be next Tuesday. Look forward to talking to you then. Thanks for listening.
Podcast Network.